at this time on Wednesday, and this is Wednesday already, isn't it? Yes, it is. We have This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, sponsored by UChicagoMedicine.org. If you think there's political turmoil today, you should have been around here this week in 1968, right, Anna?
Yeah, Bob, you know, it's such a dark week for our city this week, 1968, and the whole world was watching as Chicago was hosting the 1968 convention. The Democratic National Convention was here. There was turmoil within the party, turmoil across the country. You recall Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated earlier that year. Anti-Vietnam War protests were growing across the country, growing ever louder, and it was against that backdrop that the Democratic leadership and the delegates all gathered here. You'll recall there was barbed wire and barricades around the convention hall. 13,000 Chicago police officers deployed to the streets. National Guard called up too. Thousands of them were out there. And the tension was palpable. You know, it's interesting to go back and think of all the people who wanted to move the convention at the time. And that didn't happen. I mean, even the protesters who were coming here from all over the country had applied for permits, and Mayor Daley turned those permit requests down.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew there was going to be this wasn't going to work out so well. Even President Lyndon Johnson at the time said, let's move the convention, move it to Houston. And Mayor Daley said, no, we can handle this. We're a law and order city. And he wanted to showcase Chicago. So mm-hmm. he said he could keep things under control. We pulled some audio I think you'll appreciate, Bob, here. CBS News coverage from that time. Clashes were just starting to develop on the streets of Chicago. Police were swinging their billy clubs at protesters, trying to corral them using force. And Walter Cronkite was there at the anchor desk covering the convention when it became really clear there was something far more serious, far more consequential happening outside the convention hall.
As you heard reported from the floor, there is a move to get the floor and move to recess this convention for a week or two in view of the violence in Chicago tonight and the developments here at the convention floor. Mike Wallace is with Frank Mankiewicz, and maybe you can throw some more light on that, Mike.
I will. Frank.
Walter, Larry O'Brien and Frank Mankiewicz are talking here on the floor. Larry O'Brien, Frank Mankiewicz, what has been the subject of your conversation for the last 3 or 4 minutes here on the floor?
Frank and I have agreed that the future of the nation rests with the Democratic Party, and we're hopeful that we can carry on in a united manner to ensure our goals.
Frank, what were you saying to Mr. O'Brien?
I said I think the future of the Democratic Party depends on our not meeting while the blood is running in the streets of Chicago. I think the candidates and the people who control this convention should do something before the public gets a view of the situation downtown that overcomes our efforts here at reconciliation.
What a scene at the Conrad Hilton, wasn't it? Unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, and they kept going, Bob. The convention mm-hmm. continued, even though the riots were happening. But the whole world was watching what was happening out there on the streets at that time.
Let's talk about the notorious serial killer in Chicago.
Okay, another dark one, Bob, and then I promise we've got some lighter topics.
Good.
This one, good, I know, it's a Wednesday, for God's sake. So this week in 1895, notorious serial killer H.H. Holmes was finally found guilty of murder. He would later admit to 27 murders. Some say he was responsible for way more than that. But those who've read the book Devil in the White City will know the basic facts surrounding this story, though that's a work of fiction. And the Tribune did dig up the true facts of Holmes and really did some interesting pieces about it if you want to go check them out. But he graduated med school in Michigan, left his wife and kids behind, moved to Chicago to become a swindler. And he opened a pharmacy on the South Side near the World's Fair, which was going on at the time, and he built his so-called murder castle across the street with all the trap doors and secret passageways and just operating tables, just a horrible, horrible thing, a building that would hold secrets for many, many years. But when he came here at first, he was selling cadavers to be used in life insurance scams, the Tribune found. Mm. And without DNA back then, you know, he's able to get away with that. But he moved on to murder and was eventually caught after the disappearance of his business partner and his business partner's children. Holmes had so many ties to this man, and that one was not random. So he was eventually hanged for that crime. Mm-hmm. A Hollywood note on this one, Bob. I should mention, if you're a fan of the book Devil in the White City by Eric Larson, a lot of people have been waiting for the Leonardo DiCaprio movie version that he had said it was started and stopped and started and stopped. He bought the rights a long time ago. It doesn't look like that one's going to happen now. I guess, I don't know if you heard, about a month ago, Hulu said they'd pick up the project. Hmm. Starring Keanu Reeves, so it is going forward, but totally different.
Yeah, we've been hearing about that project forever. And so he was found guilty of murder this week in 1895. Wow.
Now when I die, now don't think I'm a nut. Don't want no fancy funeral, just one like old King Tut.
King Tut Mania. It was this week in Chicago in 1977, wasn't it, Anna?
Fascinating, Bob, how it made its way into pop culture. I mean, it was huge. You know, it's an exhibit at a museum. The King Tut exhibit came to Chicago's Field Museum, 1977. And people actually camped out in tents outside the Field Museum for this chance to be one of the first to see King Tut and all of the ancient artifacts from his tomb. Just an amazing exhibit that had never made its way out of Egypt, was not allowed to for years. There was an agreement with the Egyptian government that allowed it to come after it was discovered in 1922. They had said it's never going to leave, but it did, and it came to Chicago, one of the few cities it traveled to. 1.3 million people came to see it in 4 short months. And what was so different about this one, too, Bob, it was the first mega exhibit, the first to hit the museum circuit, really, of its kind, where people came from all over to see it. And the gift shop sales, the museum said, like, funded so many projects for years to come because people bought the King Tut ties and the tote bags and the little mini replicas. And it was a huge success. And that was part of what generated the whole King Tut making its way into pop culture, and Steve Martin doing a song about it.
Yeah.
SNL.
Yeah, we played that a lot, and it's hard to believe, but I remember people waiting in long lines, sometimes overnight, to get in to see it.
I remember the merchandise everywhere. And
sure. Yeah. So 1949 was the first time Chicagoans were able to smell the popcorn fumes. They were originally on West Madison Street, right?
Ken West Madison, Bob, that's right. This week, 1949, Chicago's all-time favorite, one of our favorites of all time, Garrett's Popcorn, opened its doors there on Madison. That was the first location. Now they have locations all over the place. You don't need the Google Maps. You just follow the smell, as you say, because you can totally smell them from, it seems like 2-3 blocks away, you know, when you're near a Garrett's Popcorn. But everyone's got their favorite flavor. You have a favorite flavor, Bob? Anyone you like the most?
You know what? I just like, you know, I'm a purist. I'm a basic, a man of basic needs, so just the buttered popcorn. But I made the mistake recently of getting the buttered popcorn at Garrett's, thinking, this will be better than putting all that stuff on it. There was so much butter on that popcorn. I mean, it was like a bag of butter with some popcorn in it. Hey, pour it on.
Oh, but it tastes so good. That's totally my favorite, too. They do point out that if you get the cheddar, if you do want to stray into that territory, they use real Wisconsin cheese, not powdered cheese, and they make their own caramel from scratch, too. We see them making that in the store sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, but the Garrett's was going strong for decades. They were doing really well, but one particular customer really ignited their name to the national audiences, national consumers. Oprah put it on her favorite things list back in 2003, like almost 20 years ago. And here she is a few years later, appearing on the Steve Harvey Show here in Chicago, still talking about the deliciousness of Garrett's popcorn.
Now, have you been to Garrett's? Have you had Garrett's popcorn?
Yes,
it's
yes,
my
yes.
Favorite thing.
Oh, man, you and my wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got this right here. I'll hold this.
Hold this right here.
I got it.
Because I bought Garrett's for everybody!
Yeah. And that Chicago mix that everybody seems to like actually started as a suggestion from a customer, didn't it?
Cool how they just do that. They said that there's this guy coming in constantly, just wanted to mix the butter, your favorite, with the caramel, and he kept ordering and kept ordering. They said, you know what, there's something to this. Let's put that on the menu. So there you go.
Yeah.
Oprah says, you get a popcorn, and you get a popcorn. Everybody gets a popcorn, Bob. After that show.
If I would have been in that audience, I would have said, oh, hey, how about a car? I don't want popcorn. Where are the cars? Finally, we have the story of the Chicago Bears mascot.
So this one is about Staley, their mascot that they debuted in 2003. The Bears said Staley is our guy. He's going to be the new mascot, and he's got he gets the crowds going. I think everyone's a big fan of Staley.
The
interesting backstory here, the Bears.
Yeah.
Some will know and appreciate. The name Staley, Bob, comes from the original owner, A.E. Staley, who operated a food starch company in Decatur, and he started a football team. It was a company football team, the Decatur Staleys, and then hired a man by the name of George Halas, and things went pretty well for the Bears after that. They entered the NFL and never looked back. But cool that they went back and said, you know what, let's get our mascot and call him Staley after that original founder.
And they actually have a Pro Bowl for mascots, is that right?
Okay, so this, I didn't know either, Bob. I had no idea, but Staley's a 5-time Pro Bowl mascot, and that's right on the Bears' official webpage. I'm like, okay, that's new to me, but he's out there. He's out there. He's a successful mascot.
Somebody likes him. This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Thanks, Anna. Have a good day.
You too, Bob.